vision. The first was the papal vision. The second was the gospel vision. At the core of the plan is Christ himself, who is to be known, loved, and imitated. And that's, I'm not saying this now to sound pious or holy, but it's vital, it's crucial that we stay there. I could come up here talking about pastoral councils and structures of all kinds, but it had to be rooted. And then the third vision was a local vision. In other words, the work of the church, as clear as this, the work of the church in the last century was one of maintenance and management. Masses were celebrated, sacraments administered, rules of morality spelled out for the people, buildings constructed and maintained, and we had the key for all these things, and all of this was largely done by the clergy. In other words, after that, the local vision, we set out to engage the community in a widespread process of consultation with both priests and people. And we saw, I think, we received an extraordinary number of amount of viewpoints and comments and suggestions. But I think it was possible from all of that to identify a few significant areas, and I hope these are helpful as well, where there was widespread agreement amongst the people in relation to pastoral needs at this time. And I suppose I'll mention them. But before I do, just the social change that we were all very aware of as we went in to consult with people, there was a clear recognition that rapid social change, that what people had to contend with in the beginning of the last decade, has had a profound effect on our church. A lot of the change, and I'm emphasising this, has been for good. Developments in education, communications, economics, cultural activities have given people a self-confidence. But that self-confidence, I think, gives them the freedom to question systems and structures of authority. In other words, bishops and priests, and indeed anyone in a position of authority, can no longer use that authority without being accountable to people. And I think that's in every walk of life now. We can't assume that anymore. But we could... people have the confidence now to question, and that's a very positive thing. There are aspects of the social changes I mentioned which are less positive, and I have mentioned them. However, and I want to now emphasise this too, our consultations indicated that the majority of people still hold to spiritual and moral values. And that was hugely encouraging that we came away with that. They maintain that people are still open to the values and ideals preached and lived by Christ, but that our church is finding it difficult to help them in a meaningful way. In other words, connecting the message to the lived experience of people is vital. And that's the consultations threw up that big time. Young people and many adults said that they experienced the church as being distant from their ordinary life concerns. They feel that our religious rituals and our faith language do not speak to them in a way that touches their lives. Now, obviously, that varies all over the place, but that's something that came from the consultation. And I think the effects, obviously, of social change has also impacted on priests. I suppose we're only too well aware of the growing gap between the church and younger generations. And I think we're conscious as well of the declining numbers of young people, although, again, not obviously applying to you, going forward for priesthood, and of our own increasing age profile. And I suppose, obviously, we can't escape the trauma of the scandals. They have been deeply painful for priests and has undoubtedly affected morale. And yet, they say, the priests would say, and I'm sure you'd say too, that people have been more openly supportive of them in recent years than in earlier times. And I think, again, the local, it's a hugely, and I say this through that period in the parish that I'm in, I hear reading the thing about the scandals, which were appalling. The bishops had to contend with them, and so on and so on, and others and so others. But I could go through my week in Six Mile Bridge in the parish, and I'd say you could too, and never even touch me. They wouldn't impact at all on what we were about. And as well as that, I think many priests, certainly a certain number of priests, see the present as a time of openness to new ideas and new opportunities. In other words, the old, is it the Chinese thing of crisis, opportunity? Crisis, it's a time. This could be a great time. Actually, I would personally say this is a better time than any time that I would have gone back on over the years since I've been a priest. There's no desire among priests, I think, to return, for most priests, to the certainties and rigidities of the past. There's a genuine desire to minister to the people as effectively as possible and to search. That's what we're at, I suppose, all of it, to search for ways how best to do this. Not always clear to us, and we need, for that, we need, I think, help. We know we can't do it on our own, that the future lies in teamwork amongst priests and laity. For example, I had a meeting last night where the three parishes of Shannon, Six Mile Bridge, and Newmarket and Fergus, which incidentally has about 20% of the population of the diocese, that we met last night with and lay people, the chairperson and secretary of pastoral councils, searching through this. And now in 2 weeks' time, we're going to meet with the three pastoral councils and priests of the three of the group as well. And we have a full-time pastoral worker to facilitate us with this. So I think everything generally is pointing towards a new model of church, which isn't extraordinary. It isn't any great deal. It isn't anything to be too frightened of. But it's something, I think, in which priests and lay people will work together in a fairly collaborative way. And the model, I think, in which bishops and priests were seen as the managers or decision makers and the people as those who obeyed instructions, I think is well and truly outdated. And in the new model, we have based in the pastoral document that we've prepared, the sacrament of baptism is a starting point, because we are baptized, we who are many, are our body, our one body in Christ. And so I'm probably taking up a little bit too much time, but I'll just skirt through the rest of it very quickly. Within the plan, we identified three general areas that are vital for pastoral work into the future, or to move into towards that direction. One is prayer and spirituality. We rooted ourselves absolutely there. Prayer and spirituality, it had to be Christ-centered. The second one was formation and support. We're going to need help, formation, priests and people, as we move in this direction as well. And the third one then are structures and communication. We set up an interim implementation group. This was the second group. And we looked at, first of all, prayer and spirituality. And I'm going back here now to something I said earlier. We said within this, prayer and spirituality, that one of the most frequent messages we received during the consultations was the need, the absolute need, to improve the quality of our Sunday Eucharistic celebration. That's crucial. That's where the people gather. And there was a variety of factors which affect, I suppose, the quality of the celebration. And among them was the faith of the priest. We have to believe it. I did a lot of, it was a priest retreat I gave here years ago. It's over 30 years ago in Meath. Your predecessor was here at that time. Well, he wasn't, I think you were in. What was it? It was, anyhow, it was 30 years ago. But going back that time, the faith of the priest, the way, I'm saying this now because I deeply believe it. One of the things that still, and I'm nearly gone out the other end, one of the things that still abhors me is when we gather for a funeral and the way we would sometimes carry on in the sacristy before Mass, a funeral Mass. I actually find that disturbing. And with the door open and priests, people here, and some of this stuff is very basic and very straightforward. But the faith of the priest, renewing ourselves all the time in the Eucharist and what we're at. The word breaking the bread as important as breaking the word, as important as breaking the bread, and how we can do it little in pieces without any great big deal, and on mornings at Mass and taking the word of God. What's he saying to us today? Am I sounding too holy now? But I actually deeply believe this stuff. That we don't, there's no big deal in this. But my faith and how I prepare for morning Mass is crucial. Or any one of us has gone out saying it, or gone out doing a wedding, or gone out doing a baptism. All these things are so sacred, the different stages of life. And how, I would say, if our pastoral plan emphasized anything there, it was important that we can do, all of us can get involved in all the time. The relevance of the homily. I tend myself to put myself sitting down there as to what I would have to listen to on a Sunday morning and how it would connect to me, how it would connect to a woman who's bundled two or three kids into a car and went to the trouble of coming out and so on. And we have to face up to this. We are being told that some of them are seriously boring. And we have to look at them. That this thing isn't about me getting rid of words. This is about me connecting a message to the people. And it isn't about me, it is about the word of God. What's he saying to us today as we gather? And then questions like, well, there are too many poorly attended masses. Then we emphasize weddings and funeral liturgies. We had confirmation last Saturday. We did big numbers. We had the new bishop for the first time, because I did it myself last year. And he was excellent, because he's a scripture man. And he was absolutely excellent. We had, as it happened in the preparation, and the whole preparation of the sacraments, whatever Rory Quinn has said, I took a photograph of the fellow. We had three young men, teachers of the sacrament, young men. My friend Tony King now says this when I tell you this. Two of them are great hurlers. Three of them are great hurlers. Tony King said to me, he said, it was the fact that they were hurlers were nearly more important than they were anything else. But I'm saying is, we had four young men there for those sacraments, as it happens. Not saying anything about the women, but we did have. It just was unique. It was a bit unique. But we had taken in the preparations, we singled out for the kids in the preparation up along the last number of months, the two gifts of wisdom and courage. Wisdom, as they move into another age, as they move into the teenage years, as they move into different communities, as they move now getting to know themselves physically, mentally, spiritually, the wisdom to be able to distinguish between right and wrong, and the courage to say, and so on. And the bishop picked up on that by accident, and the courage one. And he was excellent. But I'm just saying, we were talking about it afterwards, we had a meal, and he was saying how crucial that day, last Saturday, we had people who hadn't seen the inside of a church for donkeys. How crucial that is. Same with a wedding, same with a funeral, and so on. So we emphasised that a lot, and preparing for them, and preparing not just for the families of somebody dead, or the weddings, but touching into people. And then there were other sacramental liturgies. For all of this, we established a liturgy group. So I won't stay. We dwelt a good bit as well on group and personal prayer. How much time I myself spend at prayer. In other words, well, I won't go into this now too much either. You know this yourself. But we can't give what we haven't got. And we have to keep nourishing ourselves all the time. I would say as well in reading. And I think hugely important. We have in the parish, I'm sure you have as well, and we've emphasised these a lot. We have Lectio, we have the Eucharistic Adoration, and others have Tese and other prayer groups and so on. The second area we emphasised was formation and support. I won't take up much more of your time, but recent years, I think, have seen a considerable erosion of the power bishops and priests once exercised. And so we felt that this erosion can be significant, can be a huge benefit for our church, but it does mean other things. There can be strength. In other words, there can be strength in weakness. There is no doubt whatsoever when we are weak, that's when we can be strong. When we were really strong, clerically, we were really weak. We were moving into this. This could be our best period. This could be the period where we can rise to it. But we need, I think, attitude change and a certain amount of formation as well. My power is strongest when you are weak. That was Paul. This weakness must surely be an invitation to move away from authority leadership towards servant leadership. The Son of Man has not come to be served, but to serve. So I think we've moved very definitely into that area now. So that model of servant leadership, I think, is a particular significance for priests who have a vital role. By the way, and this comes through the whole of our document. By the way, I brought a few of these just to leave them with you. You might get nothing out of them, but I leave them anyhow. But I think it has a particular significance of priests, because right through this, we kept emphasizing the priest has an absolutely vital role in the whole development of the local Christian community and in the model that we're moving into. Absolutely. Some priests can get it into their heads that they've been pushed aside and so on and so on. We're not being pushed aside, we're only being moved to a different kind of leadership, and just to facilitate others. And I suppose that's the way for Enda Kenny and all these people as well, to facilitate the people, the resources, again going back to the point we made earlier, is there, that is around the ground. And then for some of that, priests need help. Like, for example, it came up at our meeting last night, that if we are to give people, more lay people, if they are to become more participative, we need help to be able to facilitate that and to give them the responsibility as well. Like, a lot of priests could ask, but how do I do that? And so we do need help. And the people will need help. The lay people themselves made this point last night. They need help as well. And obviously other areas of formation, and I won't go into that, with parents of young people. I found preparing the people, parents of the sacraments, useful. We had 5 Lenten talks this year, and I took them as a time as talks that could help the parents of confirmation and communion classes as well. And first of all, it brought in the crowd and younger people and so on to the talks. Donald Murray gave the first one, and he was by the way, he's coming, is it, or he's gone? He's coming, he's absolutely brilliant. His retreats and how he's doing them all, I don't know, but he is, and he's absolutely brilliant. But he gave us the opening talk, and it was excellent. We 2 lay people, one of them a solicitor, who talked about the people who shaped his spiritual life, and he was excellent. So we brought them up through that. So, and the parents, whatever way we can get parents formed and so on, and then obviously promotion of, you have been asked, promotion of vocations and so on as well, and the responsibility, which is the responsibility of every Christian. I just say that the last one, the structures and communication, that all church structures and indeed the church itself have no purpose other than to serve the gospel, and whatever structures we put in place, that's what they're there for. We felt that these should evolve, and they must be at the service of ministry on the ground and should be flexible. In other words, there's no one answer to all of this stuff. They should be flexible and responsive to emerging needs. Our consultation process identified a bottom-up, and in other words, rather than top-down approach, and a certain wariness in relation to over-structuring. In other words, if the structure again in the ground, if whatever it is, if it is a team leadership group or if it's a pastoral council or a parish council, just as we said about the church itself, that can't become the end in itself. It has to be there for a purpose. And so people should be fairly clear if we're setting up something like a pastoral council. The one we set up now in our parish, we have emphasized very heavily the pastoral and the spiritual dimensions. As you know, parish councils can be all about finances and things like that. We had subgroups to that, which are made up of finance committee, liturgy group, communications group, and things, and bereavement group. But the main thrust of the work of the pastoral council is pastoral and spiritual. Just one or two things that we have been involved in, starting May Day, as we do. We go off out through the summer, once a month out to the hills or to a housing estate or to somewhere, and we visit every house in that area. We get the local people to write up the story of that place, whatever that story is, whether it has gone back or it is a new one or whatever. And we have the Mass is connected in to that story, whatever is significant to that place, whether it is an old school or a famine village or whatever, or in a new housing estate, like one of the housing estates we were into last year. I asked them to put up their county flags, and there was 14 county flags. So, in other words, people from all over, and the significance of that in a new housing estate. And then we stay on then into the night. We light a fire. We have the women make the, or people make the, sorry about that. The people make the, we have the tea, and we have the sandwiches and the thing. We have the chat. We have the music. We have lots of music, but the whole point of it is the story and the chat and so on. And we have them right through the summer. Now, the point of that is, I actually believe, with all the talk about clustering, and we are big into it, that the sub-parish is probably key to the development of community. Because it's in the sub-parish, whether it is a sub-school or some other area, or a lake, or whatever it is, that's where the neighbours are for most people, and so on. So, in other words, we try to gear structures towards the relevance of whatever it is for people. I told the lads when they came down about the Mart. I'll tell you this very quickly, and I'll finish then. The Mart in Six Mile Bridge closed 2 years last December, 12 months. It was a significant part of the place. We have 22 housing estates in the parish, but we have a good, sound agricultural base as well. The Mart closed, and the Golden Vale owned the Mart. It was going to stay closed as a Mart because they didn't ever want it open again. It would be in competition with one of theirs down in Limerick. We, the Pastoral Council, the parish section of it, took up the battle, called a meeting of the farmers. Eventually, this went on. They didn't want, four of us took on the job of meeting with the big boys in Golden Vale. We met them several times. We pushed them, we conned them, we codded them, we did everything with them. And eventually, with a group that didn't, even including some of the farmers who wanted to walk from it, we bought the mart. And we've now, that mart is now owned by 650 shareholders. And it's flying. And as you know, everything in that world is flying now anyhow. But it is flying, and six little businesses have grown up around it. I asked somebody, a priest, to know, did they see that, the relevance of that, to what we would do in a parish? And he said, no. Well, I said, I think it is what it is all about. And you have no idea what it has done for the morale for the church thing in the parish, that has given it a huge lift. The relevance of the church, of the local, that's just an example. Now, I'm finishing, and I'm saying, and I'm sorry for keeping you so long, but basically, I suppose what we've been at is simply searching on a journey, and there's no end to that journey. We're not saying that it's over now. In fact, it's only, we're all the time on it. And but what I find in terms of energy and enthusiasm, I have been fairly ill for the last 6 months with four sort of operations and cancer and a touch up here as well. That's one of the reasons I was injured. I'm mad to be going up here. But I find being back, and people are saying to me, take it easy, rest and healing go hand in hand. But I find myself, and I say this honestly, and I'm within a year of Golden Jubilee, I find myself today as enthusiastic as ever I was, even more so. And I find the involvement of lay people bringing a huge energy into what we do. Now, it's obviously struggle and not that easy, but I find that it brings a whole new energy into what we do. And I think in all of this, what I'm saying is, I think the renewal of parish life is key to the whole concept of renewal. I leave it at that.